Narayanam namaskritam Naram Cheva Narottamam Deving Sarstim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayat Nasta Praishua Badreshu Nityang Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Yutama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Reading today from Chapter 6, entitled The Activities of Lord Rishabhadev, and we are reading from text number 5. Kamo manyo madolopa Shokamoha bayadayaha Kama bandaschayan mula Svikuryat ko nutad buddha Kamo manyo madolopa Shoka moha bayadayaha Karma bandhascha yan mula Svikuryat ko nutad buddha Kamo manyor mado lopa Shoka moha bayadayaha Karma bandhascha yan mula Svikuryat ko nutad buddha Kamo manyo mado lopa Shoka moha bayadayaha Karma bandhascha man mula Svikuryat ko nutad buddha Kamo manyo mado lopa Shoka moha bayadayaha Karma bandhascha man mula Svikuryat ko nutad buddha Ladies Kamo manyo mado lopa Shoka moha dvayadayaha Karma bandhascha man mulaha Svikuryat ko nutad buddha Kamo manyo mado lopa Shoka moha dvayadayaha Karma bandhascha yan mulaha Svikuryat ko nutad buddha Karma ha lust manyuhu anger madaha pride lobaha greed shoka lamentation moha illusion bhaya fear adayaha all these together karma bandha bondage to fruitive activities cha and yat mulaha the origin of which svikuryat would accept Kaha, who, nu, indeed, tat, that mind, buddhaha, if one is learned. Translation: the mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage to fruitive activity. What learned man would put faith in the mind? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The mind is the original cause of material bondage. It is followed by many enemies such as anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. The best way to control the mind is to engage it always in Krishna consciousness. Savaimanak Krishna Padara Vindayo. Since the followers of the mind bring about material bondage, we should be very careful not to trust the mind. Kamo manyo mado lobha, shoka moha bayadayaha, karma bandash chayan mulaha, svikuryat konutad buddhaha. The mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage to fruitive activity. What learned man would put faith in the mind? Amagyana tamarandasya janandana shalakaya chakshurun militang yena tasmai shi gurave namaha vanchakalpa turubhis cha kripa sindhu bhyevacha pititanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha shi krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shi advaita gadadhara shi vashati gaura bhaktivinda hare krishna 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 hari 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 Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari. Is this verse relevant to us? Are we not all disturbed by the mind at some stage in our lives? Actually, you can see that most people are, whether they're trying to control the mind through some spiritual process or whether they're simply following the chariot of the mind, even the non-devotees have difficulty controlling the mind. What to speak of us who are trying to rein in the mind? Even now, are some of us not somewhat disturbed in mind? Are you not worried that Rasa Mandala may ask you whether your mind is disturbed? It's a fact. We can observe at every moment pretty well we're engaging with the mind. So this verse is relevant to us all. What I'd like to do is explore in more detail these six dispositions that are mentioned. Rishabhadev actually, interestingly, mentions one means of controlling the mind, neglect. However, there are others. And Srila Prabhupada does mention this. And by the way, I do have a list of ways of controlling the mind. My mind was quite creative at this time, so I've got quite a lot of ways of controlling the mind. And Srila Prabhupada does suggest, I couldn't find the quote, but there are different ways of actually controlling the mind. And one may need to adopt different tactics and strategies at different times according to the context in which we find ourselves. For example, sometimes it's compared to a battle. It feels like that sometimes, doesn't it? Controlling the mind is a battle. Perhaps it's no accident that the Gita was spoken on the battlefield to Arjuna. Mm-hmm. So in the battle we may have one goal, but we will have to employ various weapons, strategies, and tactics in the different situations in which we find ourselves in the battle. If anyone wants a copy of these, I have a few spare ones. Of course, at the same time, there is a case for saying there is one solution, and Srila Prabhupada mentions it here. The best way to control the mind is to engage it always in Krishna consciousness. Savaimanak Krishna Padara Vindayo. That is the single key, if you like. At the same time, Krishna consciousness is very multifaceted, and it would be useful perhaps to look at these. I think there are six. One, two, three, four, five. Yes, six rather negative traits, and see how we can actually overcome those. So I propose that we do that for the next half hour. By the way, today is also Diwali, the main day of the festival, often associated with the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. On this day, Hindu people put out rows of lights, Diwali or Deepawali, with the hope that actually Lakshmi will come into the house. Lakshmi means wealth on the gross platform, but it also means more specifically good fortune or auspiciousness. Specifically, Vaishnavs remember that this is the day when Lord Ram and his entourage came back to Ayodhya, the capital of the kingdom of Kosala, and it's the new moon. So it was the night of the new moon. There weren't any street lamps and so on in those days, and therefore the citizens lit the way with rows of lights. So it is the victory entrance of Lord Ram into Ayodhya. In one sense, Ram represents Suryavanks, the sun. He's the monarchical aspect of the Lord, the sun. The sun also represents the self. So actually the self in the material world is not in its proper position. This is not our proper position. And our proper position is glorious. Srila Prabhupada writes somewhere that the self becomes situated in his true glory. It's interesting to remember that. Actually, it is our natural position. It's our rightful claim to be situated in Krishna consciousness, to know ourselves, and to be situated in our true glory in relationship to the Supreme Lord. I'd like to read then, just to give us an idea of the goal, or one, in a sense it's a goal. Actually, our goal is to become Krishna conscious. Actually, I've listed here thought in controlling the mind is that actually that isn't really our ultimate goal as devotees. If Krishna wants my mind to be disturbed in his service, then so be it. So be it. It is not actually our goal as Vaishnavas to have peace of mind. Interesting. Of course that comes, and it's natural that we want to avoid disturbance, but keep that in mind. But let me read about that stage of perfection from the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. We'll know this, of course. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained by material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks, there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. I don't know about you, but I found that extremely attractive when I first read it. The idea of actually being completely free from all miseries that arise from that identification with the mind and body. Let's go through these now. Let's go through these different qualities and explore them briefly. Lust is the first one. Karma. Karma Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna, Samudbhavah. Is that right? It is lust, Krishna says, born of passion, and which later degenerates into anger, that is the greatest enemy. We often talk, lust is associated with the mode of passion, Rajagun, as mentioned. Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna, Samudbhavah. Samudbhavah means born of Rajagun. So it's born of Rajagun. Sometimes we dismiss the three modes of material nature because we're Vaishnavas. We're above all those modes. And that's a fact, if we're Vaishnavas. At other times, we exalt the mode of goodness and we kind of are disparaging towards Rajagun and Tamagun. But actually, in everyday life, Rajagun is the one that perhaps most engages us. And according to the final part of the third chapter, from which this verse is, Karma Esha, Krodha Esha, it is that ability to deal with lust that determines our ability to be successful in this world. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example, by handling the smoke in the fire, one is able to control that fire. Therefore, in one sense, even though we're aspiring for goodness and transcendence, it is notable that we need to deal with this lust. It's the one that engages us. We need to deal with sex and sense gratification. Chanakya also speaks, Chanakya Panda, on fire. He says we have to keep a distance from three things. Women, this is male-centered, fire, and the king. But at the same time, we shouldn't be too distant from them because they're useful. One needs the protection of the king. One needs to use fire. And of course, one needs to have children. So there's some positive use of them. What is perhaps appropriate here in looking at how to deal with lust is that lust is a perversion of love. And this is the key principle to controlling the mind. What the mind actually hankers after is rasa, juice. Sometimes we talk of fruitive activities, but from a fruit, the essence is the juice. If you go to Greece, it's very warm there, if you're interested in sense gratification. And of course, as it's warm weather, they have lots of juice. And there's one make of juice, and its slogan is, "Life is juicy." But this is the fact. This is the essence of life, is rasa. It's relationship and the pleasure or the emotion, the bhav, that we try to get from relationships. That's a fact. That's why we talk in ISKCON of nectar. Nectar isn't just something that tastes good. What is the quality of nectar? It sustains the nectar of immortality, ambrosia, amrita. It sustains us. So similarly, that rasa, that pleasure, sustains us. Therefore, if we're going to be sustained in Krishna consciousness, rasoham, no, what's the word? Rasopyasya, one needs to get that higher taste to control the mind, because it is natural that we enjoy pleasure. Anandamoya byasat, the nature of Brahman is that it is pleasure-seeking. That's our constitutional position. Therefore, if we become too puritanical, we will not attract people. It is not about giving up pleasure. Rather, it is understanding what is our true pleasure. What is our true self-interest? Nate vidu svagakitim hi Vishnu. The true self-interest is Vishnu. What's the opposite of nectar? Let me ask you. Answers, please. Yes. Poison. Yes. Poison. It kills. Srila Prabhupada tells the story of the Vishakanya. You know the story? That the royal members, they sometimes used to get a girl, young baby girl, and I don't know where from, but they'd start feeding her small doses of poison. So small that the body would be able to adjust to that lethal poison. By the time the girl had grown up, and she was a beautiful girl, 16 or 17, her body was full of poison. Then they would invite an enemy and say, for your recreation, we have something for you. And then simply by kissing, the enemy would be finished. There's a French word for that, I think. Femme fatale? Femme fatale. There's an example of how lust can actually destroy us. Of course, one way of dealing with lust is regulation of sense gratification. But Srila Prabhupada mentions it must be weeded out completely because there is danger even on the royal road. However, that idea of regulation is a very, very important one, that we have to regulate our activities in the beginning and intermediate stages of devotional service. The fault really doesn't lie in sense gratification. The fault lies in our attachment to sense gratification. That's the real problem. The lust lies in us. Therefore, we should be very, very careful about, especially the men, about berating women as being the problem. Sometimes there's the tendency to externalize the problem. We may become very interested in controlling other people's senses. Have you ever noticed how we do that? We want other people to control their senses. This is a danger. If we start to become critical of others for not controlling their senses, we may have a problem. Watch out for that. We might be thinking how bad rich people are. How bad the capitalists are. How bad women are. How terrible the ISKCON leadership is. How fallen ISKCON, whatever that is, has become. Watch out for this. As a general rule, if some transgression of religious... I'll read what I've written. As a general rule, if some transgression of religious and moral principles angers us, we need to look inside to see what is going on. We're not Brahmins. Certainly, Brahmins should be content. So lust, whether capriciously indulged in or artificially repressed begets anger. This makes a bit of the mockery of the slogan that was prevalent in my adolescence: make love, not war. Whereas lust actually leads to anger. Anger is sometimes called the younger brother of lust. It follows inevitably. It is actually produced by a mixture of passion and ignorance. So ignorance is starting to come in. So passion, unless it's supported by goodness, degrades automatically to ignorance. It tends to be associated with the planet Mars. Although lust is, in its masculine aggressive form, is also an expression of the Mars energy. Mars rules leadership, sports, muscles, blood, volcanoes, boils, guns and cannon, explosions, fire, and accidents. Interesting, it actually, if you think of a volcano or a boil, it represents something that comes suddenly to the surface. Something that's inside but is actually manifest on the exterior very, very quickly. It's interesting because anger does exactly the same. It hits us before we know it, and we think, what happened? I think all of us have had that experience. That, you know, 1 minute we're feeling fine, and split second later, anger. Ironically, even yogis and ascetics, Srila Prabhupada mentions, are prone to this anger. They may curse someone. Devashi Muni is an example of this. What I've called here the irritable ascetic. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that is the greatest danger. They can actually lose. My brother once told me he was traveling in India and he saw a yogi sitting with his trident. And at one point there was a person causing a public disturbance somehow or other, making a lot of noise. And this agitated the yogi. So the yogi, my brother told me this, I've got no reason to disbelieve him, pointed his trident at that person, kind of let out a zap of energy. I'm not quite sure what happened to the person. But my brother said afterwards, the yogi was kind of leant over, devoid of energy. He depleted some of his energy through anger. Srila Prabhupada mentions that. It also pollutes the body and the mind. So when we get angry, the whole mind and body becomes polluted. Anger is primarily controlled, therefore, because it follows lust by controlling lust. There's another way. Does anyone know the other way Srila Prabhupada talks of controlling anger? One quality we need to develop. To protect, yes, we can use anger. That's true. We can use anger. That's one point, and that's a good point. We can use anger, and I guess that protects us from against those who are angry at devotees. That's a good point. What I was looking for was one quality we need to develop. Tolerance is a good one. It wasn't the one that Prabhupada mentions. Compassion, almost getting there. Love, forgiveness. Srila Prabhupada mentions forgiveness. So anger can be redeemed through forgiving those who have done us wrong. Next quality. How are we doing? Okay. Pride. Pride is the opposite of humility and is sometimes condemned as the most evil sin. However, Srila Prabhupada seems to indicate there is some place for pride. He mentions it's better than being shameless. There's a Bengali proverb. I forget what the Bengali is, but the translation is both ears cut off. Previously, to punish criminals, they would sometimes cut off an ear. And Srila Prabhupada mentions if a person has one ear cut off, he can avoid his embarrassment by walking, for example, along one side of a river. so that, unless there's any boats, I suppose, no one can see he's got an ear cut off. But he said, if you have both ears cut off, there's not much you can do. You might as well just let everyone see you. That's it. So it means shameless. One becomes shameless. I was thinking of how we actually have such terms as gay pride these days. Yeah, we become proud of our sexuality and we want to flaunt it with little discretion. In a sense, that's shameless. A person generally has discretion. Srila Prabhupada mentions somewhere, he says, you meet a husband and wife, you know they're having sex. We know, but generally in the Hindu or Vedic tradition, one doesn't openly engage in showing affection in public. So some kind of discretion should be there. So in a sense, there is some place for pride, particularly for the Kshatriyas. They had to have some courage, some chivalry, death before dishonor. So there is some room for pride. Actually, Srila Prabhupada often uses the term false pride as compared to real self-esteem. The same also goes for humility, which is the opposite of pride. It's generally accepted as the opposite of pride. There are also varieties of humility, including false humility. We should watch out for that. Am I just being compliant because it suits me in some way? Is it useful? The poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge has a wonderful quote, and I do quote, "The devil did grin for his darling's sin is pride that apes humility." Apes means it imitates. If you ape something, you imitate it. "The devil did grin for his darling's sin is pride that apes humility." So the devil grinning means he thinks this is darling sin. It's the one he really likes. He likes it. It makes him smile. It's when someone thinks they're being humble, but it's actually pride that's imitating humility. It's not real humility. Interesting. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also made a comment on this, alludes to this. He said, how can I, as a spiritual master, be so impudent that I sit on the Vyasasan and tell other people that you must surrender to the spiritual master? Is that not contradictory? You're the spiritual master and you're sitting telling everyone about the glories of the spiritual master and how everyone needs to surrender to the spiritual master. So he explores this and he concludes that actually, no, it is the order of the spiritual master. Therefore, one has to do that of one's own spiritual master. Therefore, sometimes one has to be very bold in Krishna consciousness. And according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that itself is humility. Interesting. Greed. Oh, let me just read one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Verse 23. By serving great devotees, one can become prideless. So some kind of cure there. Greed. Greed is associated with the belly, the desire to accumulate. We like to eat, but also we like to feel a full belly. What time is it? Okay, I'm going to move on a little bit here. I'm going to read a little bit from the Ramayana because it's relevant to this. Ram is returning to Ayodhya and Bharat, his brother, has been on the throne. He's sending Hanuman ahead to return to Ayodhya. Ram then said to Hanuman, closely observe Bharat's features when you tell him that I am returning. I wish to know his reaction. A kingdom rich in lands and wealth could surely attract anyone's mind. If he has developed an attachment for the kingdom, then I shall let him continue to rule as emperor. Ram showing his own. It's interesting. He's not condemning Bharat, which is interesting. But he's saying, that's okay, I'll let him. He's showing his own detachment. Coming back to previously, the whole process of preaching is not to condemn, but is to set an example. Hanuman left at once. He bounded swiftly through the forests and soon reached Guha's abode, telling him, Guha, the happy news. The Nishada king was overjoyed and he immediately set about preparing to leave for Ayodhya. Without delay, Hanuman continued on to Ayodhya and he arrived early the following morning. At a distance of 2 miles from the city, he found Bharat's dwelling. There he saw the prince clad in black deer skin, emaciated from fasting, his hair matted. He sat by his wooden hut and shone with ascetic glory. This is the sign that one is a true ascetic. One shines. The self becomes illuminated. And he was surrounded by his ministers and priests, dressed in similar ascetic clothing. Hanuman approached Bharat and found him continuously repeating Ram's names. The monkey at once lay flat on the ground, offering his obeisance. Then with folded palms he stood before the prince and said, having completed his exile and slain Ravan, Ram will soon arrive, accompanied by Sita and Lakshman. He has asked after your welfare, and he longs to be reunited with you. Bharat was overwhelmed with joy and sank to the ground in a faint. After regaining consciousness, he stood up and embraced Hanuman. The prince shed tears of happiness and he spoke in an exuberant voice, O monkey, I do not know if you are a god, a rishi, or whatever, but you have told me the most wonderful news. I shall give you 100,000 cows and many beautiful maidens adorned with gold and jewels. Interesting response there. Gratitude. Feeling of gratitude. Why was he feeling gratitude? Because he was going to be reunited with Ram. Interesting. Bharat asked Hanuman to tell him in full what had happened to Ram since his departure, and the monkey recounted the tale. Bharat was delighted. He told Shatrughna to go into the city and spread the news of Ram's impending return. Imagine how different this is from many brothers in the royal family. Many examples of the royal family where brothers fight brothers over the inheritance. In this case, a kingdom. Mm-hmm. It's almost the normal course of events in this world, isn't it? For brothers to fight. Bharat ordered that the city be full. At least when it comes to issues of inheritance, one is, you know, often thinking, when will I get something? Sometimes we think those things. That's natural. People even kill their parents to get an inheritance. It goes on. So it's quite normal to somehow be affected by the thought of acquiring something for ourselves at the cost of someone else's welfare. Hanuman could easily understand Bharat's heart. Ram should have no doubt about his brother. His devotion to Ram was obviously no less than the devotion Hanuman himself felt. The monkey shed tears of joy as he witnessed Bharat's display of love for Ram. An example of how there was no greed. I'm just going to go through the others very quickly. The others are lamentation, associated with ignorance, actually. The Shudravana, lamentation in its extreme becomes depression. One may suffer so much that one even takes one's own life. So this is real darkness, lamentation. And Krishna condemned lamentation at the beginning of the Gita. Ashochan, avashochas, Prigyavadang Shabasase Gatasu Nagatasuingscha Nanu Shochanti Panditaha. He says, one who's a pandit, Nanu Shochanti, doesn't lament. You're speaking learned words, but actually one who's learned doesn't lament for the body, that which is temporary. We often have good reasons to lament, don't we? Huh? Yeah, I've got a good reason. I mean, if I hadn't have had that guru, if I hadn't married that person, or if this had happened, that had happened, everything would have been fine. Nonsense. Cut through that. Krishna cuts through it. Sometimes we may have, there is room for feeling emotion. Sometimes we have to grieve. There's the whole idea of grieving and letting out those emotions. But also there's the idea that we need to actually be wise to what's going on here. It's a waste of time. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, a devotee should not be subjected to lamentation or illusion. There is the following statement in the Padma Purana. Within the heart of a person who is overpowered by lamentation or anger, there is no possibility of Krishna being manifested. The next item is illusion. I'm not sure what it means, but I guess illusion isn't exactly an emotion, but it means seeing things as they are not. Mm-hmm. Mistaking one thing for another, a rope for a snake, thinking good to be bad and bad to be good, or convinced of those, that is illusion. Srila Prabhupada writes, in regards to the last two items, lamentation and illusion, by discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. So the discussion of knowledge, seeing properly. Final one is fear. Interesting one. It really is, according to the Bhagavatam, it's actually largely associated with ignorance. Generally, the mass of people are controlled by fear. It's hard to find someone who's completely free of all fear, isn't it? That's my experience in life. Most people seem fearful about even small things. Even when you're traveling on the Eurostar, everyone's afraid, I'm going to get a good seat. I'm going to sit next to a good person. You can see, when you see people in public places, most of the time, fearful. Yeah? Isn't it true? You don't find many people who are actually free of fear. It's a great quality to have, isn't it? To come in the company of someone who is fearless. One who's fear, having taken shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. It's a wonderful quality, actually, to meet someone who you feel is fearless. Very endearing. I'll read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2, Verse 41. As already explained in this chapter, Bhayam Dvitiya Binivesha Syat, fear or illusion arises from thinking there is something not dependent or not connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now in this verse, the specific process for overcoming this fearful illusion is given. One must train one's mind to see everything that exists as an expansion of the potency of the Supreme Lord. By offering respects to everything and meditating upon everything as part of the body of the Lord, one will become free from fear. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, verse 29, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the well-wishing friend of every living being. As soon as one understands that everything that exists is under the powerful control of one's most beloved friend, one comes to the stage in which the whole universe becomes a blissful abode, Vishvam Purna Sukhayati. Because he sees Krishna everywhere. That doesn't necessarily mean that kind of one is kind of hallucinating or something and sees Krishna everywhere. But one starts to see how everything is connected to Krishna. Yeah? So therefore, the sun is Krishna, the moon is Krishna, the wind is... And most importantly, whatever happens to me is for my benefit. It is good. There is a lesson to be learned. Krishna is not a malicious God. He is not a wrathful God or a jealous God. Of course, there's only one God, but he's not... So there is that conception of God, that God is wrathful. No, everything he's doing is for us. So that practice to see whatever situation I am in is good for me. It's an interesting meditation, isn't it? To try and think in that way. Sometimes we wonder, when something bad happens to me, does God love me? I mean, Radha Gopinath, why me? Right? We think like that. But actually Krishna loves us. Therefore, as soon as we appreciate that, we grasp that, immediately by our fear goes. There's nothing to fear. He's protecting me at every moment. And he's a good person to have protecting us. He's kind of powerful. Yeah. I'm going to read one other, actually another quick point. I'll read a quote and then we'll finish. Srila Prabhupada mentions fear can be conquered by prowess. That means courage. Courage isn't the same as fearlessness. Courage means there is fear, but by developing prowess, courage, I will overcome it. That needs some practice. And one can develop that courage. One needs to practice it. Rather than shrinking away from situations which are fearful to us, we actually go forward and meet those situations. Prowess. There's also an interesting verse here. I'll finish off with this. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Verse 27, Bhishma Dev speaking. As far as salvation is concerned, one has to conquer the principles of lust, anger, unlawful desires, avarice, and bewilderment. To get free from anger, one should learn how to forgive. To be freed from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. We could say selfish plans. By spiritual culture, one is able to conquer sleep. By tolerance only can one conquer desires and avarice or greed. Disturbances from various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. One shouldn't eat foolishly and then think there's something wrong with my mind because I'm disturbed. Also keep the body healthy. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes, and money can be saved by avoiding undesirable association. By practice of yoga, one can control hunger, and worldliness can be avoided by culturing the knowledge of impermanence, transience. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up, and false arguments can be conquered by factual ascertainment. Talkativeness. Some of us are very talkative. Can be avoided by gravity and silence. And by prowess, one can avoid fearfulness. Perfect knowledge can be obtained by self-cultivation. One must be free from lust, avarice, anger, dreaming, etc., to actually attain the path of salvation. Questions or comments? Is this relevant? Yes, Anasuya. The last quote is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Verse 27. It's Bhishma Dev speaking. That is the purport, yes. Sorry, it's 1927 purport. It's interesting. There are specific ways of dealing. I mean, all in all, the verse says we have to control the mind, but there are also specific ways of dealing with all these negative traits, to which we've all had experience of those one way or another, of being a victim to them. And it takes some practice to learn how to deal with those. Further questions or further comments? Yes, Kanchan Navali. Mada means pride. Let me just have a look. Yeah, you're right, Mada, pride. They could be the same. I think there's a case for actually saying that being proud of borrowed plumes. That's an English expression. Borrowed, a plume is a flat feather. So someone may take a feather and put it in his hat and be proud that he's wearing a feather. But the feather came from a bird. It's not his. But somehow he's thinking, oh, I'm dressed very nice. Yes, so there's a case for saying pride could be seen as madness. He said, a synonymous. Yeah, I mean, as soon as you identify with the material body, there's a certain madness there. Madness is often identified with thinking you're someone else. I remember going up the old Berry Place temple. I don't know if anybody went there, but it's a very tall, kind of winding spiral staircase there. And as I was going up, I heard Ribhatananda Swami, do you mean to say you are the Jesus Christ? And as I came around the corner, I saw this bearded, long-haired gentleman saying, yes. So generally we think we're Christ, Napoleon, or if we're ladies, the Queen of Sheba, or you tell me. People actually believe. So we don't take them seriously. We think this person is crazy. He thinks he's Napoleon. He's keeping his hand warm. So similarly, if we think that we're the body, it's also a form of madness. I think that's confirmed in the fifth chapter, Vimudha, by, I think, Lord Rishabhadev or Bharat, I forget which. But he says, that is a nunam pramatak. Nunam pramatak kurate vikama. Pramatak means mata, again, mad. Pramata means really mad, really mad. So you identify with the body, it's a madness, and you engage in sense gratification by that. So there's a case for saying that thinking we're someone that we're not is a kind of madness. Yes, Kanchan Navali. Three things you should keep a good distance, but you shouldn't be too far from them. Yeah. Then you're finished, and therefore the whole battle, the whole debates about men, women, black, white in the material world, they're just so bad because they're still based on the idea that we're this body, and therefore they don't get us very far. And in one sense, there's something to be saying, yes, okay, I've got a man's body, and accepting that's where I am, and accepting the differences. with humility. Srila Prabhupada mentions a devotee is not, I think it's on here actually. Don't resent being under the control of time and destiny. Srila Prabhupada writes somewhere, a devotee does not resent being under the control of time and destiny. He understands it's Krishna. So he doesn't resent, now I've got this body. I remember, I think it was one devotee, I think it was Hari Sori, I forget, one devotee had a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada. He said, Srila Prabhupada always looked very comfortable in his body. That's an interesting comment. Everywhere's the Krishna's abode. So wherever I am, it's okay. Therefore there is some acceptance that we are under these laws. The devotee doesn't try and become above the law. Sometimes we think that I can be above honesty, but we don't practice that kind of transcendence when we cross the road. No, it becomes a little inconvenient. There are laws. Car's going at 60 miles an hour, it's 30 yards away. If I step out into this time, it'll take me, you know, more than 0.3 of a second to get across its path. There are laws. Therefore, a devotee is not resentful of being and accepting that those laws exist. And behind, he sees there is the Supreme Lord behind all those laws. One more comment or question? Freddie, you can see it coming. Well, that's an interesting question, and there's an interesting debate, of course, in philosophy generally about the relationship between matter and spirit, and which is responsible, which produces which. Ultimately, it is mentioned in the I don't know which chapter of the Gita, I've forgotten now actually, saying that the material energy produces all the reactions, is responsible for all the reactions, but the living entity himself or herself is actually responsible for the happiness and distress. So it may be that actually if there are certain chemicals, and say we get an injection of some chemicals, they will affect us. So there seems to be that two-way influence. The matter affects the self, and the self affects matter. But ultimately, the agency of the self is supreme. And I just read a quote, I don't have it on me, but I just read this morning, where Srila Prabhupada said, we are responsible entirely for our own happiness and distress. That's our philosophy. So ultimately, the agency belongs to spirit. Therefore, one has to try, by conquering these negative influences, regain one's independence. That's the process of spiritual life. We're regaining our ability to become free and to act freely. But in a conditioned state, we're still bound. But by acting according to Dharma, we gradually regain our freedom. And then once one is absolutely pure, one is free. One can do what one likes. But that takes some time. And therefore we have to learn to deal with these influences, with our conditioning. Did that answer your question? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol.